Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
Devin, what do you got for us today?
I came up with this one myself.
Oh.
Make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah, it sounds like something you'd say.
Sounds like I've heard that somewhere. No, you make, know. Make hay while the sun shines.
Nice.
That one's like such a such a simple one. Obviously, I didn't make it up. That's been around. But I was, we were driving somewhere. We're heading home, and we're passing. We got a lot of farmland around us. I said, look, there's a, they chopped down. Or I just said, there's a field of hay or something like that we were just talking about, because they had just, they were clearing it and it was drying. And, you know, it changed, feel it like overnight. You see a whole field of green. And the next time we came by, it was like 50 acres of, you know, hay.
Just dried, mowed, yeah, dried, mowed down.
Yeah, yeah.
Hay, yeah.
And I think I said, they're making hay. And my wife's like, you know, you don't make hay. It's not like a... it's not like a like making something or making it. I'm like, well, you do make it. You have to. Well, this was my. I slipped up. I said you got to plant it, right? But she was like, you don't plant grass. It just comes up. I said, well, yeah, you're right about that. Okay, well, retract that. But you have to go through the process of, I mean, you could say creating it. Or you have to bring a tractor and chop it down and let it dry and bale it, and you're making hay. You're making this thing that animals can eat and livestock can have, and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, like the term, make hay while the sun shines. And she was like, what? I said, you've never heard that?
Don't make push hay it while me. The sun
shines. And she was like, huh? I was like, you have to heard that. She's like, no, I've never heard that in my life. And I said, well, it's a thing, and in it, they say make hay. And she said,
I didn't come up with it.
I was like, you know what that means? And then I think she was just playing dumb. She was like, what, the sun's hot? I said, you know it's not about the sun. It has nothing to do with heat and hay. I mean, it does. But.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny. And I agree. You know, it's like, but you do have to make hay, right? Because if you don't cut it and bale it, then it's just grass. It's just a field of grass and weeds. It's not hay until you've cut it and you've taken that, you've taken a raw material and you've have an idea, and then you facilitate that based off of the idea, and you then create it and then make it and
you know,
bale it and then sell it to farmers, or you feed it to your animals. Otherwise, it's just a field of grass.
Right. Yeah. So you do have to make the product.
Right. Yeah, but, and I like the make hay. Do you know who said that, or is that just like a...
No, I think it's just like a proverb. It's probably been, I mean, been around as long as hay, as long as people have been cutting down grass and feeding it to animals.
I guess that means, like, take advantage of the time you have, right?
Make
hay while the sun shines. It's like, while it's shining, you do it, you know?
While there's a favorable situation, make the most of it.
I think that's a more common one, is make the most of your situation.
Right.
Yeah. Make hay while the sun shines. Yeah.
Right. So
it's like, when it rains, it pours, you know, that type of thing almost.
Right. Same. Right. It's when, when there's a favorable situation, get to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Take grasp of an opportunity when it happens. You're ready. You've planned it out, and then sun's shining. Right. Let's get to work.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that, and I think that's a it's good advice to anyone, especially makers, but you know, it's good advice to anyone just to be ready to take the positive spins of your life when they spin your way. Right. And you know, and like when it's raining, you know, what is it? When you have lemons, make lemonade. Like how many proverbs can we think of right. that are the same, that have the same meaning, you know, like, yeah, exactly. So it's that like, yeah. You know, I think that's important, especially for, well, I don't know. I'd want that to be important for content creators and YouTubers and like other people who are on social media. And, you know, as when you have that influx of, interest in what you do, try to stick with it, you know, like try to capitalize on that interest and keep rolling. And, you know, obviously I think most content creators have that mindset that, you know, that there's something that works for what you do and what people like, mm-hmm. and you know, you have to enjoy it as well. That's why we do knife making, and that's why we do all the other stuff we do. And the ones that we know people like when we started the channel, it wasn't to make a knife making channel, but that's what I like to do, and bows and axes and tools. And yeah. those are the things that people want to see. And so we just make sure we come back around to those more popular ones more often.
Yeah. Right. And there's only so many things you can make or you feel like you want to make.
Right.
You're not going to be welding steel structures or inventing like contraptions.
Right.
That's a whole different like subset of YouTube, but
right, exactly.
you do the tools.
Right. Yeah. And I, you know, and even like, to be honest, I mean, when I see other channels that are doing the same thing over and over again, you know, I get bored with them. I'm like, you know, it's like, I feel like I've seen that unless it's something that I haven't seen before, like they're doing something with knife making or something with tool restoration that's different, that'll capture me, then I'm okay to like skip over it, you know?
Yeah.
Cause it's, you know, but, which I think it's the same reason why we do different stuff on our channel, just because we like to have that variety, bring in different audiences, but also just do a variety of things. Cause I don't want to just make one thing. It's the reason why I'm not a knife maker full time. It's like, I don't want to do that all the time. I want to be able to have hobbies. I want to be, you know, a jack of all trades. I want to learn all the different stuff and learn new techniques and things and bring them in and show people and take the viewers on that journey.
Hmm.
I think that's like, that's part of it.
Jack of all trades or master of none.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or master of all. 10,000 hours.
Do you have 10,000 hours for each craft?
No. I've got for what I would say, the only thing I have that I have 10,000 hours of in easy is making art, you know, fine art, landscape yeah. painting, landscape drawing. That's something that I definitely put a ton of time and effort into. And that's what I always go back to creatively when I want to create a piece of artwork. I always doodle trees and I always doodle landscapes and, you know, things that I see, I draw from what I see. And, yeah, but, no, I mean, you know, I'm definitely not, I'm not a master of any of them. I enjoy doing them all. And I think that it is important. I don't know if this is just situational because it's what we do, but I think it's important to show people that you can do a bunch of different stuff. You don't have to be the absolute best at everything to enjoy it. And also to, you know, make something off of it. You know, like when you can make something and give it to somebody else or sell it, you know, we could quote Adam Savage from his making what a maker is, podcast or what a maker is episode of Tested. But you know, it's like when you make something and someone else appreciates it, that's that exchange of I'm doing this because I'm a maker, I'm an artist. And what happens is what happens between the viewer or the user of that tool or that the viewer of the artwork, that's when that interaction happens between someone and what they're seeing. And I think that's what I like about making, that's what I like about art is that interaction. And I think that's some of that like pride, you know, you feel good when other people see your work and they appreciate what you do and you get some feedback and you can grow because you get some, you know, obviously going through grad school and being as a fine artist, critiques are something that are all the time. You're always working and you're always presenting and you're always trying to get better and you're getting feedback from other people to get mm-hmm. better all the time. And half of that is like, look at this thing that I've done. And that's why I mean, not always, not everyone, but I think any good critic or good teacher will give you positive and constructive criticism. You know, like, this right. is good, this is working well, this is working well, and this is, try this, or maybe you can work on this thing here, or this part of this isn't working, because there's always somewhere to grow. You know, we have to be striving to get better, I think.
So how many hours, how many hours until the student passes the teacher and doesn't want any more feedback?
I don't think ever. Well, I guess
you want feedback from people who you respect.
Right? Yeah, right, exactly.
So if you love what they do, if you love what they do, then you'll right. take the feedback. And yeah. you can defend yourself, or, you know, it's not defending, but you can go, "Well, right. this is why I did it." Maybe if you understand why I did it this way, or I find that a lot of times if they are saying something, you've probably already thought of it and noticed it as well. Right.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
They go, "Now I don't know about," and before they finish, you go, "Yeah, right. That part, of course I'm going to do that." And then that kind of stuff, that's good too. But
yeah. And I think that being a maker, being a creator, you have a natural, at least for me, I have a natural tendency to put my work out there, understanding that people are going to look at it and criticize, you know, either positively or negative. That's fine. It's just, as a maker, I think that's part of the vanity, is always like putting something out there and hoping you get positive feedback back from it, but knowing that you're going to get some negative too, and just being prepared for that. I think, and I say this to my students, that as artists and designers, we are taking like our soul and our heart and our feelings, and we're just putting them out on paper or out in the world for other people to see. And it's like, I'm taking a part of me and putting it out there, and I'm expecting to get some type of feedback on that. So you have to be careful sometimes of how much you put out there, right. You know, like how much you really, how willing you are to get feedback on your heart and soul and feelings and beliefs.
Right. there's something every once in a while, for people who don't know, I do a video production for sports team, usually live production on live games. And that's all the stuff you see that goes to the big screen, not necessarily TV. And a lot of times I will do replay and highlights. And as you're rolling different replays, as the game goes on, you're also usually building some type of highlight package for the end of the game, depending on the sport. And if I find myself, once I'm done, and then a producer sometimes will say, "Can I see it?" Or they'll say, "Hey, I need a highlight package that's a minute and 15 seconds. Most people will leave it at that. If they know who you are, right? They just assume
you'll get it done. They trust you, yeah.
But there's some people and different teams or different producers who always want to see it. And I have to, for a second, you get slightly offended. Like, I'm like, "It's done. It's a minute 15. This is," it's kind of like, for one, do you think I would give you like a lesser product, or
right?
Do you think you can do better? And maybe they do, and they right. and there's a good chance that they could, but I think this is the best that
can be done with what you have.
That can be done with what I have. Trust me, I've looked at all the angles, I've done it nice, but then I have to sit back, or just go like, it's not. The job of a producer, right, or someone who's managing, as we all know, it's to take, and sometimes it has to be there, like, what they want it to be. Right. It's not necessarily what I think is best sometimes, and that's the whole, maybe it could be the same thing with a client, right?
Yeah,
maybe
exactly.
Maybe you think this is the coolest knife in the world, and they're just like, "Hey, I'm not feeling it. I know you love it, but I think it should be this way." So then I'll change if they want, "Hey, can this clip be here, or why is this clip, or do you have a different shot?" And I'll do it, or I'll explain why.
Right. Yeah.
Like, yeah, the other angle wasn't there. This camera guy didn't capture it, but you know, you're a little offended, but then you're like, it doesn't matter. Sure. What do you want me to do? I don't, you know, I'll do it.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's, and I talk about that often as well with my students, because we are a design school where I work, and I'm teaching architectural, like, you know, how to think and how to work like a designer and how to create things like an architect. And in that situation, design is about making for someone, for a client. I mean, you could be once if you've built up enough renown and you have done, you know, you've put your time in, then you might be the head designer at a firm. And then that's years into your creative, you know, output. And then people say, okay, here's what I want. You just go ahead and make it. And mm-hmm. they'll trust you because you have the renown. But mm-hmm. for the majority of your, you know, creative life as a designer in any type of situation, profession, you're going to be working with a bunch of other people who all have a say in it. And in the end, it's really about the person who's paying you. They get whatever they want because they're paying. So you have to decide what you want to do. Now, do you want to be someone who you just make it and put it out there? And that's why I think a lot of knife makers try to get away from doing specific orders, like they take orders and let people, you know, decide what they want. A lot of knife makers, I think, prefer and wish they could be more just let me make a bunch of stuff and sell it, and people who want to buy it can sell it.
That's true.
Like the ideal.
Yeah. Right. That's the main thing you see is like, hey, I got a batch of knives. What do you like?
Right, exactly.
That's great. It's almost like certain things you just want to let people do it. And a lot of people want to have their say, but it's like if you don't like what I do, you don't have to order from me necessarily. Right. If it's specific, then yeah. But if it's...
Yeah.
If I'm going to Italy and someone's making me pasta, I'm not going to tell the old Italian grandma how to make her pasta.
Right.
Oh, I actually like it with a little thinner. Like, just give me your favorite thing.
Do you have Prego?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, when I was in Italy in grad school, we went for 5 weeks between my two grad years in the summer. A couple of the people that I went with were vegetarians. Mm-hmm. And I know at least two out of the three of them would eat whatever was put in front of them while mm-hmm. we were there, whether it was meat or not. Because it was like part of the experience, right? And it was part of like, you know, if they could avoid it, if we had a couple courses and we knew that there was going to be like a meat course and then a non and blah, 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 they might just skip over the meat course. But if it was like, if this is what we were having and everyone was having it, and if, like, especially this experience of being somewhere and experience a different culture and,
right.
you know, you just, sometimes you got to just do what you got to do. You got to be part of that experience. And I think, when you are buying something or when you are getting something from someone who's an artist, you want the experience, you want to experience what they have to offer. And so ideally you would hope that as a maker that you could just make what is your type of thing and then people would appreciate that. They wouldn't, you know, they'd be like, okay, that's what I want. And that's the reason why when we were coming up with the idea to make the journey knife, it was like, well, let me come up with an idea of something that I like and then I'll be happy to make more of that thing in the future. I'll make a couple batches here and there and I'll sell them. And there's enough interest and there's enough people out of the 125,000 subscribers and people who watch and people who see on Instagram, there's enough people that I probably won't have a problem selling 8 or 10 knives.
Yeah. There's,
you know,
there's
I know like be, everyone always is always saying, oh, how can I get this? How can I buy this? Or
there's going to be can 10 get, suckers make a out knife? There.
Right, exactly. They want what I make, whether or not, you know, that's the thing. They want the experience. They want to have something that's made by me. Yeah. And that's what you hope, as I think all makers hope that you can make something and, you know that that's what I do or that's what they do and you want to get what they do. It's like you editing the video, like the first couple videos we did on the channel, you'd send it over and I'm like, all right, let me take a look at it. And I'll let you know, I'll give you my feedback or, you know, if I see something that's weird. And that lasted like two videos. I was like, I'm done looking over it. Like, I don't need to go through and watch it after you. It's like, I trust you do. Yeah. Like,
I didn't even mean it that way. I didn't even think of it that way.
Right. Right.
Because I work kind of a team, not really like,
mm-hmm.
I don't work for you. You don't work for me. Neither's the client.
Right. But yeah, exactly. That makes more sense because we are a partnership. So it's like, hey, are you happy with my part of this? Yeah.
Right. And you would have the right to go like, this is weird, or I really hope you would include this. Or if there was something you didn't feel comfortable with showing, even though if there's mistakes, I'll usually probably show it just because it's fine.
Right.
It's good content. Everyone makes mistakes. It's nice to show it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you know, I appreciate
exactly.
that.
I guess it's a different,
also, by the time I'm done, it's pretty much locked in.
Right.
It's like, yeah. I can go back if there was something really important to you or there was something weird that you noticed. But other than that, it takes so long already.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like in my mind, you know, I'm doing something the way I'm thinking of it in a first person point of view, but everyone else who's going to be watching it is third person. Right. So it's not like, so your perspective is better than mine because you have the perspective of what you're seeing and what you think the audience should see because how they're going to get it. So like I might do something and I might think, you know, I'll say, honestly, there's never been something where I'm like, oh, you didn't include this thing. You know, it was like, because I either one forgot it or what I watched was like, oh, you got the whole thing. It's, I made it all the way through. There was no big part that was missed, you know, like it works well, but yeah, that is something nice about working as a team, as a, you know, a partnership is that you can consider that and we learn each other, you know, like, okay, I know that you're going to do this type of thing, or I know that you'd know what things I'd want to show, what things I wouldn't want to show. Like every time something funny happens or something weird happens, we're like, oh, that's going to be great. You know, like, or that's going to be a good learning opportunity for someone else who does the same thing. It's the same reason why we have like the disaster stories on the podcast is because we like people to understand that we're all human. We all do these crazy things.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So, what's been going on? What have you been up to, Dev? Anything interesting this week?
Yeah, we've been shooting and editing and, I've been still, I know sometimes it's like multiple weeks. I'm like, I'm working on this video, but I am. There's at the end of editing a video, that's my favorite part. But the best part is knowing you only have like one more sitting to end it.
Right.
Like I've set myself up for only like 2 hours of work.
Nice. Yeah.
Which I'm excited about because that's just fun. All I got to do is wrap it up and do the beauty shots. Some music and so it's fun. So that's ready to go and it will be out this weekend. We'll get it out or you know, maybe Saturday or Sunday and it will be. But then we also have we can go into you want to go into the knife build more?
Yeah, yeah, and we talked about it last week too on the podcast because it was the collaboration with the 9 other knife makers.
Yeah.
And actually Tyrell Knife Works just sent a little like the little promo video thing that's supposed to be goes out on the 28th, I think it is, that we all put on our channels. It's like this funny cinematic, dramatic, like bum bum bum, 10 YouTubers, dun dun dun, make the same knife, and then it has all of our logos, like boom 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 boom. You just hear our names and stuff, and it's like, and then you get to vote on their favorite one, and like what we win is bragging rights, and so it's like it's really good. I was watching, I was like, hell yeah, this is awesome. It's super cool. So
watch.
I'll
now,
send that to you.
We're all going to get, like, it's going to be blocked and demonetized because we're all taking each other's, like, videos. You know, it's going to, like, it's going to delete half of them. YouTube's going to be like, there's already content. Yeah, content strike. We're all going to get strikes against us. But, so what we've done now, though, we made the mistake that everyone makes is going, hey, it's 2 months away. We got plenty of time. And we put that aside in our brains. And now Dustin and I are stuck with a very limited amount of time to not only shoot, but me also having to edit it. So that's another thing I've been really pushing on this last video. And I had thought for a little bit, maybe I'll just skip this and jump right to the next one. But I think I want to get this out because we haven't had one for a couple weeks.
Right.
So, but we have like 3 days or something, maybe. To do it, I don't know. And how long until it's, when is the knife video supposed to come out?
June 4th is the date where they'll go live on our sites. I think that there's a June 1st, July, sorry, wait, June? What are we in right now? May, June. June 4th.
July would be great.
Yeah, right. Oh, we got plenty of time. No, yeah. Yeah, I think June 1st is, I'll have to look back why. There's a reason why they need to be done on June 1st. Or something like that. And then and then June 4th is when we're all going to make them live. Okay. So we technically have until June 4th.
If they need, like a video clip or something of us, I can send them like a teaser.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. If it doesn't have to go live until June 4th, you have until June 4th. it might need to be done, but really, you know, it could be not completely done.
Yeah. But, so we're going to really have to busts our butt and finds some time.
Yeah, so it's the 20th today. This podcast will come out on Friday, the 21st. And we're gonna shoot on Sunday. So yeah, we started forging on Monday. And the thing is that we're just both pretty busy right now.
Right.
You at the Orioles and me with school and life and everything, and you know. And so started on Monday, got the forging started, worked in the smithy, which was awesome. And then I worked again yesterday for a couple hours on forging. Cause we got most of the shape kind of refined. So I'm just kind of still working it and thinning it and getting the shape a little bit better. I have it mostly done, but it could use, you know, another couple heats, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 heats, something like that. So
yeah, I mean,
so we'll get the little ending. Yeah.
Right. And we always try to show it all, but sometimes right. you just can't, or a lot of times I'll skip over 2 hours of work because it doesn't look like much changed.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's, you can only see so much of one thing. Grinding is a big thing. You can only watch, a minute of grinding before you're really bored of grinding. So
yeah. So I think we'll probably,
there will be a lot of you blacksmithing in the video for sure.
Right.
But there's going to be a chunk of it where you move forward, small movements. It takes a lot, but it won't look much difference. And then we'll wrap that up and then move on as quick as we can.
And that's the thing too. It's like, I'm not a blacksmith, you know, I'm not really a bladesmith. I'm a knife maker, but I'm definitely more just a hobbyist smith. I like doing it and I'm learning and I'm getting better, but that's not my main focus. But I did want to, like, the stock we started with wasn't wide enough to do the entire height of the blade at the heel, which is 2.5 inches, a little bit more. So I had, you know, we start out with a 2-inch stock, so I had to draw it out. I had to make it thicker. So I figured, well, we'll do that and we'll shape the blade down. And I have a good shape on it. And I'm happy with where it is right now, but it's still super thick. It's not, you know, it has a little bit of a distal taper, but not much. So it'll be a lot of grinding. So, but the grinding, the majority of the main stock removal will go quick. You know, it's like, I'll just put on the 36 grit and I'll power through it and we'll just like cut off a ton of stuff. And then once we get it down to a general shape, you know, general bevel ground into it, then I'll do the heat treat and then we'll go from there. So we'll have, ideally it'd be nice to do smithing, grinding, you know, the initial grind and get into the heat treat on Sunday. I think we can do that. Mm. And that way, then I do finish grinding and, you know, finish sanding and then handle on and then final shaping. And then ideally, so, and then,
I know.
And then maybe, I think, you know, etching the blade, I think we can do that. That should be fine. So.
Yeah. If
I can get everything set up,
that might be one we can do.
Yeah, exactly. It may not have an etch. It may just be. It may be what it is, which is fine too. I don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah, maybe
it's not for sale, so I'm not. Yeah, I'm not worried about it if we don't do it. If I can do it, great. If not, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, because
we are running into it.
I know there's
going to be a few really long nights of editing, but
yeah, I guess okay. Like what you mentioned, you know, kind of get the editing started as we're moving, and which is what we do normally. And the other thing too, it's not like we took time off. You know, like, it's not like we weren't doing anything from back when we were invited to join until now. We were making all sorts of stuff. We're always continually making. We just have less time these days, so the videos take a little longer because we're just more busy.
Yeah, but yeah. Summer's tough, but we shall get it done. The video will come out. The knife will be good, and it will be produced.
It will be. It will be our video, and it will be cool. So I've been. I made two axes this made. I made two axes this week. I restored two vintage axes. One, which I think I told you, I think I told everybody about, was the one I stole from the boatyard that we keep our sailboat in. There was an old rusty axe, a Craftsman Michigan pattern axe on a broken handle leaning up against the wall at our clubhouse at the boatyard that I sail out of. And so I took it and put it in the back of my truck, and I was looking for the owner of the boatyard, and I eventually found him and said, hey, I took your axe. I'm going to clean it up and, you know, restore it and put it on a new handle for you, just because that's what I like to do. I enjoy it. And so he was happy about that. And I got that done. And then I got the two axes. Actually, we didn't talk about this one because on Saturday we went to our brother Drew, our next older brother, his son Finley's first birthday party. Was on Saturday. My dad texted me earlier that day or the night before and said, "Hey, I got a couple axes for you. I'm going to give you tomorrow a couple, and as well as some other tools that I've picked up." So we were at the party and we went out, and he had a plum rounded lug jersey and then a Kelly Perfect, you know, jersey with bevels. Both really beautiful axes. The Kelly Perfect has a crack in one of the cheeks is cracked, so I'm going to have to fix that because it's, you know, it's based definitely split where, you know, the handle has been wedged through it. So I'm going to have to fix that one, but they're both really beautiful axes. And he also got me a little set of, I think, 1/8 inch numbers and letter stamp. I have a 1/4 inch set, so he got me a 1/8 inch set. And then a bunch of, drum sanding bits for the drill press to be able to do like sanding, which we've done before. He said it was like everything he paid. It was like $10 for everything because he got the axes for $5 for both of them. And then, like $3 for the stamps. And then it was like a toolbox with all the stuff was like another couple bucks. So,
yeah, Dustin gets so many gifts that my dad brings them to him on other people's birthdays.
Hey, you know, it's like, that's funny. Whenever I think about that, I always think about, I think it was, the Essential Craftsman who said, he was like doing a video about anvils, and he's like, if you want an anvil or if you're looking for an anvil, just talk about anvils all the time. Tell people you're looking for an anvil. It's like, have conversations, ask people about it, because more than likely someone's going to see one and they're going to think about you and they're going to reach out to you. You know, if you need to get it, because anvils are so expensive now, they're so hot, everyone's trying to get them and they're really expensive and hard to find. So hard to find with, I mean, a reasonable price. So, yeah. You know, that's one of the things. I'm always doing stuff and talking to stuff and talking to my dad about tools and things. And so talking about my interests, like I think he was, so he had gone up to a grocery store to get some bacon for our mom because she was making, broccoli salad or something for the party on Saturday. And on his way back, he drove through a different little town, and the streets on both sides of the town were just lined with yard sales. Like the entire mile long was just like a gigantic yard sale through this little town.
I thought you were going to say you were talking about bacon and he got you a pound.
I was talking about bacon, and then they got some bacon too.
I know.
Dustin likes bacon, right?
Dustin, I like bacon too. I love bacon.
But yeah, so he went through this, this yard sale, and he saw it all, but he knew my mom needed the bacon for her recipe. So he went home. And he dropped it off, and he's like, "All right, I'm going back up." So he went back up to the yard sales, drove back up, and spent a bunch of time walking around and getting stuff. And he knows that I collect axes, obviously, and so he just asked one guy, I guess, at one booth or whatever, was like, "You have any axes?" Maybe it was out in front of this guy's house, and he was like, "Oh, I got a couple inside." And he like went into the garage and brought two axes back out. He's like, "I don't never use these things anymore," and I could tell they were both on, you know, really poorly seated on old handles that didn't fit right. It was like definitely utilitarian. It was like, these things have been here for years and years and years and haven't been used for a super long time. So,
yeah, you know. Dad is the king of the ask.
Yeah.
Like he will ask anyone. I joke at work. So I work with my dad in certain sports teams. He will get any swag there is because he just asks. Most people are either embarrassed or like worried they'll be seen weird, but he's just got that great old guy confidence.
Yeah, right.
You know? Everyone's just a kid to him. Hey, can I have one of those? Hey, you giving those away? Are those free? Can I have one? Yeah. Oh, sure, I'll give you a hat. So he's always got hats. He always gets double of whatever giveaways there are. He'll get baseballs from ball boys. Like he's like, because people don't know what, you know, it's such a forward thing sometime,
right,
for someone to go, "Hey, can I have one of those?" And usually though, with swag and things like that, people, they don't care if they give away an extra one.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, "Hey, this other employee wants something." Sure. So he So in, he also does this in life, and he's not afraid to ask. And that's
he's an opportunist, that's a good, you know, it's like, here's the opportunity. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The other, I wouldn't say downside, but the thing about me being a maker and making things and having a, you know, an artist as well, is that my mom always asks me to do stuff that she wants done well and cleanly.
It's true.
Like
it's
if it needs to be display something, it's me. It's like, can you do this for me? Can you make this for me? You know? And my dad jokes, he'd be like, I can do it. And she's like, yeah, but you know, Dustin will do it like a little better. Or like, you know, my mom and dad, they'll be like talking about something and they'll both have this aesthetic eye, and my mom will have one point of view and my dad will have another point of view. And they're like, well, what do you think? And then I'll give my point of view. And either, you know, most of the times mom's like, see, I told you, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, but my dad, you know, he doesn't mind. He understands that it's my perspective as an artist and a maker is a different type of perspective than just a normal maker. You know, I have an eye for craftsmanship, I guess. That's like one thing that I try to do, that like that's what the channel's all about, is being a maker, but being a craft, like an artistic craftsman at the same time.
Yeah. Dad just asked me to do labor stuff.
Yeah. Right. Hey,
can you
pull
come
the
knock
shed down?
This thing down. Yeah. And that's exactly what we're doing this Monday coming up. We're going, and we got this shed up in Westminster. We got to take down.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he told me about that too.
Yeah. So I'll be doing that. Yeah. That's, I'll be putting the new, truck to use for sure.
Nice. Yeah. And my next thing is that mom asked me to shorten, regrind one of the knives that we restored for her, because it's too long for the knife block, which is true. Like it is, it's a 10-inch long knife, and it's the reason why it sat in my shop for a while and I didn't restore it, is because it's too long for my knife block. So my dad had given me another knife, like a butcher knife, to restore an old, I think it's called Old Homestead. So it's like a thin carbon steel knife. And you know, my mom really likes them. So my dad found one, and actually Nicole, my wife, did all the restoration. So we reground everything and cleaned it up and re-oiled the handle. And we gave that to my mom. And then I remembered that we had that other knife, and I was like, do you want this one too? I was like, it's too long for our knife block, but I'd be happy to give it to you. So I did. I gave it to him, and I actually cut him a piece of wood and had like put the sides on so they could actually build up their knife block a little higher up top so it would fit. But it's still a little, it's too long. And they were like, could you shorten it like 2 inches? I was like, I can, sure. Like, you sure you want me to do that? Like, but you know, it'll still be an 8-inch chef knife which is a kind of standard length. So yeah, so I'll be doing that. So you're helping tear down a shed, and I got to regrind and reshape a chef's knife. We both do things that we're good at. Now, yeah, he did ask me. He was like, I got this part I need to pull down up in Westminster. You have time sometime? This was a couple weeks ago. He mentioned it, but I was like, sure, just let me know. If it's a time that I can help you, I'll help you.
Yeah, but I have the curse of being available during the day that he's also available.
Right,
so.
Exactly, yeah.
Speaking
of new trucks, I got picked up my new truck today. Hey. Here, let me send you a picture. I'll send you a couple pictures. I'll send you, I have one that's a before/after. So I cleaned half of the truck and I took a picture from the front. It doesn't look as bad as it was. It's because it's all wet and shiny. So even the dirty side is like wet and shiny. But that's the one, and then I'll send you this one too. There you go. That's
you did
the
half
clean
and
side.
Half.
Yeah, that's it was great. Just because it had sat and it was dirty and you know pollen and dirt for a whole year that it's just been sitting. But yeah,
are
so
those,
it is a.
Are those steel bumpers or plastic chrome?
They are steel.
Nice.
There's the black on top is plastic. You know, it's got
yeah,
like a
right,
plastic
right.
top part. But yeah, it's all steel. It's steel that's chromed. So it's a silver, it's a Dodge Ram 1500 V8, and yeah, it's great. I mean, I brought it home for, you know, like a 40-minute drive from where we picked it up, and it was super dirty and smells all musty inside because it's been sitting for a while, but Now it's shiny and clean, which is why we started the podcast a little later, because I was outside scrubbing it till dark since I got home and like sprayed it down and washed it off, because I was like, I just got to get it. You know, in my mind, it was like, it's got to be different. You know, it's like, I got to clean it off.
Right.
So, yeah. So it's nice and pretty and shiny now. Silver with, you know, kind of black accents. It does have the running boards along the side, you know, step up in. And
yeah. Oh, it's, well, I mean, you don't even need to, well, it's.
No, it's not weird. Super tall. It sits a little higher than my Ford, but really? It's not. Yeah. It's a little higher.
Okay.
Yep.
No, it looks great, man. It's really nice. What year is it? So people, it's a V8, yeah.
It's 1500. Yeah, 2001. Yep, Dodge Ram 2001 extended cab, silver with black wheels, and black trim.
The price is the best. How much did you? We already said that, didn't we, last
week? Yeah, 800 big ones.
Oh man, dude.
800 smackaroos. It's a steal. Yeah,
it was a steal.
So yeah, like I said, I drove it home. It didn't overheat at all. It was running well. There was like it was a little tricky. It was a little stubborn switching gear sometimes. You know, like it's an automatic, so it was a little like. But I think that's just kind of there's cobwebs and stuff. It's been sitting for a long time, so. But I'm sure, like, just as much as it'll get a little better, because things will smooth out. There are also things that will pop up, because they'll be like, oh wait, we've been kind of okay, but now once you run us for, you know, a couple hundred miles, then like by the time I got home, there was definitely more of a squeak in the belts, you know, so the belts might be a little loose or old. They'll probably be replaced, and the brakes felt fine. Oil's fine. It sounded really good. It's got a Dynamax exhaust system or something like that, so it sounds nice with the V8 engines. It's got a great, nice, deep, like bassy, you know, rumble to
it. Nice extended cab in the back there.
Yeah, it's really nice, and the interior is actually in really good condition. Black fabric interior. It's musty because it's been sitting for a while, but it was all because the woman who owned it was kind of a hoarder, not like a crazy hoarder, but she just had boxes full of stuff in the truck. So everything has just been sitting under boxes full of stuff, but not like mildewy and gross, just boxes of stuff. So all the fabric and everything has been preserved, kind of. It's like a time capsule. Like it hasn't been unearthed for a while. So yeah, other than, you know, smelling a little musty, but you know, everything, cruise control works. Hey, power everything. And so, I know, man. I was like, I tried on the way home. I was like, oh, look at that. The cruise control works.
My
89 had cruise control. That did not work.
Yeah, after having an old vehicle, the simple things are so much nicer.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I remember I had the Ranger, the Ford Ranger, and it.
Yep.
I think it was like, I don't know if that was a V6 or not, but, you know, I felt like, by the end, they had no power left.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It was like a V3, you know.
my Ford like is the same way.
You know what I mean? Going up hills, yep. You're like, but the second, like, you get something that actually simple things, like, oh, this goes up a hill without slowing down, boy.
Yeah, it's got power now. Behind it. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the engine seems like it's in good condition, other than like a little clunky in the shifting of the gears. But other than that, it seemed pretty good. And you know, I don't know. I guess it's the best I could ask for the price that I got it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a, you know, friend of a friend and a good deal, and someone, you know, I knew I could trust to at least give me something and have like an honest, you know, for some reason the engine blew up tomorrow, you know, I'm sure I could get my money back. You know, it's not like that. Yeah, it's like they want to give me something that's in good condition. And I'm excited.
$800, all you gotta do is last a few months and you basically made your money
right.
out of it.
Exactly, right. And it seems nice. It seems like it's gonna work well. Yeah, with plenty of power on the highway. I got it down in the Middle River area, so came up 702 and around the Beltway all the way to Delaney Valley, and then came up Delaney Valley Road, so kind of with the back roads too. Just kind of wanted to test the brakes and test the turning, but then also test high speed on the Beltway. I think it's great. Yeah. It'll need new tires because they've been sitting for a while, and I know one of them has like a real slow leak, because when I went to look at it, which was two weekends ago, they had put air in the tire and it had held all day, and then he said that it was like a third of the way flat when they brought it out of the other place today. So they stopped by a gas station and filled it back up. So after sitting 2 weeks, it's losing air slowly. So they'll have to be replaced. But I kind of knew that anyway.
And it looks like you could afford some, as afford space, not money. You can, yeah. There's some space for a bigger tire there.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah, put a little bit bigger tires on it, and that'll bring it up a little bit more and make it look a little bit better. That's what I'm thinking. And I got the extra money to spare because it didn't cost much. So, yeah, it'll need new tires, so I'll put on, you know, a little bit bigger tires and clean up the rims and everything. And, yeah, it's great. I'm excited. It's really nice. Kate, like I said, I brought it home today and parked it in the backyard and started washing it right away. I was like, I need to see the diamond in the rough. And I told Nicole and Corinne, I was like, come outside, look how pretty it is. When I was done, they're like, woo, like walking around, be like, ooh, it is pretty.
That's funny. No, that's great, man. That's exciting. I love getting a new cheap vehicle.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fun. There's no pressure. I mean, I loved getting the F-150 too, but I feel like pressure to perform is right. it has to last, and there can't be big issues because we already spent a lot of money on it. So
right, it's got to be pretty much perfect right now. You know, like there should be no issues. At least for a while, like at least for like a year, you shouldn't have any issues. You know, it's eventually, you know, things go, and you hope that like there's some type of warranty that you can, you know, pull on or whatever, like you said, you know, that you have like 1,000 miles at bare minimum to bring it back if anything weird happens. So
yeah, I'm taking it up to the mechanic to give it a once over, and I want to let him look at it and make sure there's nothing. But I mean, it feels great. It's real fun. But
right on. Yeah, man. Cool. So we wanted to talk a little bit about. We had this idea of a topic, and we came in this idea tonight that we didn't really have much of a topic to talk about on the podcast today, but I was thinking about this idea of what it means to be a maker, which we've kind of hit on so far. You know, obviously your quote was about that, and we've been talking about that.
We hit on that a lot.
The reason why I was thinking about that was because of the whole bladesmithing thing. You know, like I'm not a blacksmith, and I enjoy shaping blades with a forge, but I don't do it all the time. And does that, you know, because it's not super easy. You know, it's like everyone always says, well, it doesn't really matter either, you know, stock removal or forging, same difference. You know, you're still coming away with a blade that's quality blade. And I believe that's true. But I do think it's a different type of skill. It's a different thing that it's a different thing. So it's not like, you can't just say I do it this way because I prefer it. Not unless you have forged a lot, right? If you have done them both, then you can say, you know, then you can choose which one you want to do or do both sometimes. I guess a good example of that is like Jeff Fader from Knife Talk Podcast. He does a lot of stock removal, but he is also trained as a blacksmith. So he's, you know, also forged a lot of knives, and he does what he does because it's what he can make money, right? You know, knife making is a business. So stock removal, he knows he's going to get consistent results with heat treating. He knows he's going to be able to grind a blade and it's going to be the right shape and size to start with. So that's what most of what he does is, but he also has the experience of forging blades to know that there's a difference there. And so that's kind of one of the things that I have thought about, and I've forged, I'd say maybe a dozen blades over the years, but nothing as big as what we're doing now, and having to move as much material. So that was definitely an experience, and also the idea of not having the right tools, the right tongs to hold on to. The steel is a big difference too, because that's it. Like you're taking time finagling, you know, a pair of tongs. It's not really made to do what you're doing. It's working okay, but yeah, so it was an experience, and it just got me thinking about that difference between, you know, stock removal and forging blades and what that difference is, and having more experience and having that fresh in my mind. I thought that was one of those things that is debatable. You know, it doesn't matter which one you do. You can do both, but there should not be a discussion that about one being better than the other, because they're two different things almost completely. I mean, the whole forging and shaping takes a while. Once you get past that, then you're doing the same thing on both sides, whether you're taking a piece of steel that's already ready to be ground and shaped, or you're taking a piece of steel that then you need to shape into something, then you can grind and shape. You know, once you get that past that point, then you're grinding, you're heat treating, you're shaping, and you're finishing. You're doing the same thing. But
right. How far back do you have to go to for everyone to accept that you made the whole thing?
Right. Right, exactly.
Do you have to smelt the iron and steel that you're going to put into it? Do you have to collect the minerals to go into it? Do you have to dig all the way down into the earth to get the coal to heat your fire? Like,
right.
Just like, yeah. You can go back and back and back as far as you want. We all have to start somewhere. Yeah, and maybe, right. Maybe you'd have a point if someone bought a kit and was selling them as their own knives. Right. Maybe you go, okay, that's not your design. That's just a kit. Everything's pre-shaped. All you got to do is grind a little here and there and put a, you know, all you have to get is sharpen it. But if you're taking anything, whether it's an axe that's already made and shaping it into a different style axe, or right. a chunk of metal and cutting it down into the shape of a knife, that's all you're doing. You're cutting yeah. steel into the shape of a knife. I mean, you have to heat treat it, and you got to put a nice edge on it and a blade, but how far do you have to go back before people give you props?
Right, exactly. Yeah, before you can call it whatever you want to call it. Now, that's the thing. Like, there's, you know, you need to be honest with what your approach. And, you know, you mentioning the axe, we just got another comment recently on the Bushcraft Axe video, and someone said, you know, you might, I forget what the comment was, but it was like, you know, you should change the title of this to modifying an axe or something, or whatever they said. And, you know, I commented back. I was like, you know, I was like, yeah, I thought about that over the years, but, you know, I'm still making a bushcraft axe. You know, I'm taking right. a half hatchet and I'm making it into a bushcraft hatchet.
Right.
So I am making it. You know, I'm not forging. I don't say forging an axe, forging a bushcraft axe. You know, right. like I said, I'm making a bushcraft axe. So I'm not lying. And that's what I, in my mind, that's what I'm doing. It's not like we were trying to trick people into watching that video. And even right. then, I think when we titled that, I think almost all of our videos were titled that, like making this, you know, so.
And they still mostly are. So we're not trying yeah. to clickbait any. It's just, right. you can say crafting or what would
yeah,
you want to use?
Modding, I guess. Like, yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, just, yeah, I could have said like, turning, you know, modifying a half hatchet or something into something else. You know, it's like, I could have said that, but I didn't need to say all that. I told you what I was doing. I'm making this thing. Like, I didn't right. have a bushcraft hatchet before it, and at the end, I have a bushcraft axe. You know, like,
yeah.
so I've made right. this thing. And yeah, exactly. Where do you start from?
I remember we made a choice to add the unfinished hatch, not an unfinished, but a whatever.
Oh yeah, half hatchet in the thumbnail.
Yeah, the half hatchet is sitting right next to it.
Right. Yeah.
So
exactly.
we have the original version, and then we have what Dustin made next to it, and we made kind
right.
of that was like a thought, like, hey, so you're seeing it, but it's also right next to it. That's a thing that it was.
Yeah. Right.
And we can't go into all that because it becomes too wordy. We're not going to do a long. Doing this from this and blah blah blah, and then it's just that's no one. I don't know. It's not. It's too wordy for a title.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's like you want to bring people in with a creative title. It can't be too long because it needs to be. It needs to capture their attention.
Yeah. But
so you try to be honest with it, and you try to show them an interesting thumbnail. And a lot of times we'll do, you know, something on the thumbnail that complements the title. So the thumbnail will say one thing and the title will say another thing that are similar, but they work together because people see the thumbnail. Right. You see the thumbnail and then you see the first like four or five words of the title. Anything past that is just dot, dot, dot when you're scrolling through YouTube. So you gotta think about those two things together.
Yeah. It's not, we've never done clickbait. I mean, if that's what works for you, that's fine, but.
Right.
When we strive not to do clickbait, when people try to call us out for clickbait, we're like, we never do it. That's the whole point.
Right,
we try
exactly.
not to do it. We do our best not to clickbait.
Right.
We really are trying not yeah. to.
And, you know, something for like the sewing machine video, the Chinese sewing machine, Like, literally, the whole point of the video was to unbox it and put it together and see if it worked. That's, like, the video was that. It wasn't, let's use it, let's unbox it, put it together, and use it for 2 months, and then do a video of all of that. It was purely just the opening. So it was like, that's why it's, what's the hype? You know, like, what's all the hype for this thing, you know? And yeah. And it was, you know, opening up or putting together the Chinese sewing machine. You know, it's like, we were honest with what we were doing because that's what the video was about. Mm. You know, it's like, we weren't, it wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't just a kind of sensational title just for the fact of being that. It was, I'm literally opening up for the first time, I'm going to take it out, and I'm excited to see what it is. Because right. I hope, and I'm excited to think that it might actually be something that's pretty cool.
Right.
So, yeah. But I think that's, I think that's just part of, I think that's part of making hay while the sun shines. Try to make our hay and do what you can and not try to pander to what is the, all the rage at the time, but do what you love to do and people understand that. And, you know, also try to, we are trying to make it beneficial and make it, pay our bills somewhat and hopefully more and more. So, we may have to, at some point, there may be a more clickbaity title because we might need to make sure that something happens, but we're going to try to be honest too,
it'll never be as crazy as other people do it because.
Right. Yeah.
It depends. If you already love the channel, then the title doesn't matter. But if you're not sure about the channel, then you lose faith. It's the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, you're talking about this crazy thing again. It didn't really happen. Okay. Like, so I really either already have to love your channel, like, let's say something like Wrangler Star, where you want to watch them anyway.
Yeah, right.
But if you're someone who I'm not sure about, who has a couple hundred thousand subscribers, and I'm on the fence, if you lie to me in the first video,
then I'm done.
Like, okay, this, I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
You lie to me and then you try to get me to buy some mobile game. I'm out.
Yeah. I'm done. It's funny. That kind of reminds me of, not really, but, the post that I put up on Instagram today of the slow motion of me hammering on the anvil. And that was kind of like, oh, let me get a cool picture of me. You know, cool slow motion of, forging, and maybe I'll get some sparks and it'll look really cool and I can either post or send. I was just like, I wonder if I can get a cool shot of this. Mm. And then it ended up being almost a joke because the reason why it was like that, it had that like in and out, like, effect was because it was like a rubber band, right? Being like strung. It had that just because. Yeah. Where I put the tripod at first was outside of the retaining wall, out of the forge, but it was too far away. I wanted to zoom in some. I didn't really want to zoom in slow mo, so I put two of the legs inside of the smithy, and the third leg was kind of resting over the retaining wall, and because the tripod has those like accordion supports that hold the three legs to the middle post, it's not an accordion, but it's two pieces that hinge. It's kind of springy, and that's what was sitting on the wood. So when I was hammering, the ground was shaking, and it was on that springy, like, I didn't see it happening, but that's why it did that. It's because of what it was actually resting on. It could vibrate. But then it came a really awesome, like, effect of this, like, in and out. I like what I said to you. Great. Like, you're like, man, people pay good money for that type of effect.
Yeah, that's a tough effect. That's like you know, every time something hits, it's like, whoa, 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 like,
right.
It looked great.
Yeah, I was like, super cool. And it was funny. It was good because what I was showing was not that exciting. It was just the steel wasn't that bright. You know, like, there weren't a ton of sparks. I wasn't hammering super hard. It was just like, oh, but there's a cool effect. That works.
That was great. Yeah. I have some more. Actually, I'll do a proper intro to this segment. You ready?
I'm ready.
Dear Dustin.
All right. We're doing our Dear Dustin segment. All right. This is where we read some questions that have come in either through YouTube or email or through the podcast, anything. So Warner Tom 3393 says, "Dear Dustin, just curious, do you preheat the oven to 400 for tempering, or do you put the knife into a cold oven and let it slowly rise to 400?
Oh, that's a good question.
This is specifically in context of, you know, heat treatment, knife making.
Right, heat treating and knives for tempering. This is post quenching, so you've quenched the knife, it's hard, and for tempering, what do you do? And because I don't have a heat treating oven, an actual like specific oven for heat treating, I would like to get one, but I do not have one at this point. Anybody wants to sponsor the channel and, you know, Even Heat or Paragon Kilns, we'd be happy to use and love them. But but I use my just the kitchen oven, and I do not preheat it. I just turn it on. I put the blade in and I let it come up to temperature with the blade in. My reasoning behind that is because it's in the oven for such a long time. I do the two-hour cycles. So it's put in the oven for 2 hours at 400 degrees. I take it out of the oven. I just set it up on the stovetop, let it cool to basically room temperature, maybe 10 minutes. And then I put it back into the oven for another cycle at 400 degrees. But I don't preheat the oven. I just put it right in. And like I said, because it's such a long cycle, a long 2 hours, it's that 10 minutes or so that it's going to take to get up to temperature and bring the blade up with it. I don't think it makes a difference.
There you go. All right.
Yep.
Next one from MM Reporter. "Dear Dustin, I spent a couple of hours yesterday making a sheath for a butcher knife I towed around in my truck. Turned out okay, but was nothing special, until I added a little basket weave to the upper portion. The stain was real dark, and with polishing, the sheath went from bland to a more decorated look. Have you tried doing some inlay on your sheath, i.e. snakeskin? Now that is a really great look."
I read that comment, and I like that. I think that is good, and that is something. I will say that I have not done any tooling. So on leather, when you're stamping or you're using, you know, different shaped stamps to put in a pattern, that's called tooling. I have not done any tooling on leather other than stamping in initials.
Yeah.
And I think I tend to enjoy more simple things that are done well. So I like, if I can do something that's really clean, like a clean look, clean lines, nice, even stitching, nice, you know, bevels on the welts, you know, on the edge, and, you know, everything's burnished and clean and oiled. I prefer a simple design rather than embellishment.
Right.
So I normally don't. I do like the idea of inlaying something into it. Like a lot of times there will be, you'll have like a flat piece of leather, and then you'll have another piece that frames the outside, the profile of it. And then behind that frame, you can put in something else like snake skin or, you know, or fur or whatever. And you can get this kind of inlaid feel to it. That would look kind of cool.
I really like, I just love how leather is so easily manipulated.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That amazing. you can really stamp anything into it. I think that's a really cool thing to do. Basket weave. We've seen that all over the place.
Yeah.
It's a cool look, right? It's a little bit more busy, but it's a cool look. And
it's definitely cool.
Something like snake skin or even like minimal stamps. If you had your logo or you had a couple little stamps here and there.
Yeah.
It's so easy, and it's instantly, like that guy said, it's kind of instantly impressive.
Yeah.
If you're not happy with what you've done, right, and you wanted that clean look, and it just doesn't look clean because you fudged something up,
right?
Then put some stamps. Yeah, maybe I'll drop some stamps on it, and then everyone is immediately impressed.
Yeah. No, I agree. It definitely has a good place in leather work, and I do think, you know, if I were going to do something like that, I'd probably want to do it while the sheath was still flat, while the leather was flat, and I might kind of fill an entire area. So that way when I do like fold it and do it, it's got an even pattern. I don't know. It's just like, I like a smoother, more, I don't know, something about like a simple design I usually prefer. So that's the reason why I don't do it on mine, but I love the way other people have done it. I think it looks beautiful when they do it. Another thing is that it's expensive. Those stamps, you know, they're like $4 or $5 a piece. So if you want to do like multiple things, you got to get all these like tooling stamps and stuff, and the price adds up.
Well, maybe maybe we should do like a video. We'll spend $100, get like a whole set of stamps, and like, what's the best stamp? The greatest stamp ever.
Hmm? Am I going to completely change the way I make sheaths from now on out?
I'm never done making a sheath again.
Exactly. I'm completely done making leather sheaths. No, I do like, you know, like on the edge of mine, I'll do a line for my stitching, and then I'll do another line cut in just on the inside of it. That's like that type of simple design that's really clean is what I like. But also, if I do that line and it's not parallel with the edge, it really bothers me. And I'm like, ugh. Or if I kind of like, if I fudge a little bit and kind of cut off just a little too much leather in one spot, that's like all I can see.
Being detail oriented, I'm like that as well. I don't have as many chances to see my work like that, like you do for products. But I went to AutoZone and picked up a little vinyl American flag sticker. Yeah. I'm like, look, I'm going to throw it on the back corner. It's just, it's like, I guess it's like 4x3 or 4x, like real small.
Yeah, right.
But I just wanted one right in the back corner of the truck because it's got nothing else on it.
Yeah.
Just, I like that. That's nice. It's clean. You know what I'm about, but I'm not like crazy. You know, there's not an eagle like scooping a terrorist out of an ocean with a flag burning behind it. You know, it's not crazy.
Right. Yeah, you're just like, yeah, you got the American flag.
I got a Ford truck. I want the American flag on it. I'm going to get a nice clean one in the corner. And I've been staring at it through the window of my house just like, is that the right spot for it? Like, ever since I put it on it, I like look. I'm like, I think that's right. And I asked my wife, does that look right? She's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, ah, you know how. You don't care either way.
You're not really looking at it. No, look at it. Right. I'm looking at it. No, yeah, really just, look at it. Come on.
It's a sticker on a window. But yeah, is it in the right place? Is the spacing okay? She's like, I don't care. But it looks nice. I've decided I think it looks nice.
Nice, yeah. I'll have to give you my opinion on it when you come over.
No, don't even.
I'll give you an honest opinion.
No.
I'll be like, just you gotta cut it off and try again.
Just leave it.
I liked on my Ford, I had in my back window, there's like some space coming on both sides. So I had this like strips of metal on either side of the window in the back. Not, you know, like the entire window, left or right. And there was a perfect size on either on that strip for like stickers there or right inside. So I just did a bunch of them there and on either side, like that's kind of where I put the stickers with either side of the windows. And yeah, it is though. When I put it on, I'm like very particular. It's got to be, especially if it's a rectangle. Like it's, and on most vehicles now, there's no straight lines. Like if you're putting it in the corner of a window, it's got to be like you got to put a level on it just to make it am I doing it level to the ground? Is it perpendicular parallel to the edge of this or that or?
Right. It matches the bed. But it doesn't necessarily match the lines of the
window. Yeah, right.
No, of the window trim. And the heating lines, the conductors like across like. But it matches the bed, so you can like it's somewhere in between. I don't know. It's a mess.
Man, speaking of the back window, I don't have an openable window on my window on the back of the truck.
Oh no!
It's all just one big piece of glass. And on the way home today, there are two switches. There's the window switches. You know, for up and down electric window switches on the driver's side door. And then there was one more switch that was above it that was unlabeled. And maybe it was labeled, but I was driving down the highway and I'm like flipping it up and down. I'm hearing this clicking. I'm like, what is that noise? Like, is that the entire window? Like, will the entire window come down? And I'm like messing with it. And then I like look over at the passenger side door and it's just the locks. I'm just flipping the locks up and down, a lock up, lock down. I was like, the lock. Of course it's the locks. It's not the window.
That'd be so cool.
And then I was like, the entire window rolls down. I'm like, nice. No, no luck. That's solid. Yeah. But
okay. Anyway. All right. We got some more. We got a good, I think we got like 5. All right, here we go.
All right.
Dear Dustin. Oh, sorry. This is from Jason Mourns Always. Okay.
Jason Mourns Always.
You know, a saddle stitch is just a running stitch that runs down and back. ...
That's true. That is what it is. Because I guess a running stitch, I guess, if what he's calling a running stitch is just basically a stitch where you go up and up through two pieces of material and then down and then up and down and up and down. You just kind of work your way. If that's a running stitch, that is exactly what a saddle stitch is. It's just a running stitch that goes down and then comes back up using the same holes, but going the opposite way. The reason why a saddle stitch is what it is, that you're using one piece of thread with two needles on either end, and you're doing that at the same time. So you're bringing that needle in from the left and in from the right, going through the same hole, and then pulling it tight, and then going up to the next hole and doing the same thing. And so you're doing that running stitch, but you're doing it on both sides. So it's like a double running stitch. It is what a saddle stitch is. He's right.
Right.
And I think a saddle stitch also has specific, like, as you go through, you twist it around once. So each time it's wrapping around itself and locking on the inside of the hole. So that you can't do with a running stitch up and down. You can't spin it around it unless you were like fishing it through as you went. But the, like, when I do right. a saddle stitch, I put one needle through, I pull it out most of the way, then I put the other needle through, and then I take the needle and I wrap it around once or twice on the opposite side and then pull it all tight. So it is like making a knot after each one.
Yeah.
So yes, it is. And no, it's not. More on that.
Dear Dustin, says Con Whitlock, very detailed and comprehensive tutorial, beautiful craftsmanship. Your channel is a plethora of info. Thank you so much for what you do.
Oh, thank you, Con.
I just wanted to put that out there for us. It's nice.
Yeah, that is nice. I appreciate that, because that is what we try to do. It's like, that's what we've been talking about this whole time, just being people who make stuff. You know, sometimes I'm going to make something that it doesn't look like it would be very hard, and it's probably not very hard. And then other times I might make something that's pretty hard, like the knife we're making right now. It's taking a lot of work to do the smithing and then the grinding and the shaping and the heat treating and the knife handles and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So on and so forth.
Yeah, I'll throw a compliment in there every once in a while. All right, here we go.
I appreciate it. All right.
Here's kind of the half and half. This is from Rolling Up My best. Sleeves.
Okay.
They got a nice logo, so I don't know if it's a channel. I didn't check. I just pulled it up and saw it. So.
Okay.
It starts out with, sorry, bud. That's not a good start, but here we go.
Bud.
I like the time you put in and the passion, but you remove too much material, and your method requires more material to be removed on subsequent sharpenings. I'm not referring to the reshaping, which is a cool method and a good guideline for people who don't know where to start. The reshaping is necessary, but honestly, I've never seen an axe sharpened so poorly that it gets a flat end like that. In a nutshell, you lost me at the power sander and the angle stuff. Use an axe, I guess it's way better, and you'll know what angle works best. Remove too much material and you shorten the life of the blade. That's false economy. Cheers and keep up the cool vids.
Yeah, I read that one and I replied to it as well.
Yeah, right. I saw that.
Reply there. I appreciate those type of comments because, you know, I do like to hear other people's opinions on stuff. And when they can do it in a way that I think that he was trying to be genuine, saying like, I appreciate what you did and there are some good things, but I also think that what you did was not the best thing for this axe, which is fine. Right. That's great. You know, and that's why I replied to him and I try to do what you tell me to do. I try not to give too much to the people who are criticizing and give more to the people who want to get that feedback and will come back and watch more. But when people do take the effort to write something and they try to, you know, come across, you know, they're not trying to come off completely negative. They're trying to be like, I appreciate what you're doing, you know, keep up the good work. But I really think that this wasn't done the right way. That's fine.
Right.
You know, that's fine. I don't mind that type of comment. And that is true. And, yeah.
And the hey bud comment that bothers me, but I can understand how some people would think that's a friendly start.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like, hey bud, I just think blah, blah, blah. But to me, I see it as like, hey bud.
Yeah. Like, hey, little guy.
Hey, little pal. Listen up here. I'm about to school you.
Yeah. Hey, beginner axe guy. Like, yeah, right. Oh, you well, if you use an axe more often, you'd know what they're supposed to be used like. Right. Yeah, it's like, don't come at me about axes, man. Like, I've chopped right. tons and tons of stuff
Easy
with axes.
Axe,
yeah.
man.
I was like, whoa, whoa. Yeah, I was And There's yeah, no I mean, I know what he meant for that, because that one I did put a pretty like steep grind on that one. That one is a very almost flat grind down to the end, and that puppy is sharp as a mother. That is it is nice, but yeah, it's you know when you anytime for an axe is a splitting tool, and you want to put a convex grind on it to the end, so that way you're strengthening that the material right behind the edge. If you do a full flat grind, which is what racing axes do, you know anybody who's a competitive you know, timber sports, they're using axes that are super, super fine, like, you know, kitchen knife fine, because they're designed to cut really fast and really oh, yeah. deep. But right. an axe is a tool 99% of the time, or even more than that, 99.9% of the time, an axe is being used as a tool, utilitarian, and you don't want it to go dull. So you do not want it to be super thin on the edge. But that axe had a pretty thin grind already. And so I just, yeah, that was nice that I still need to put it on a better handle, because the handle that I put it back on, or that it was on in the video, wasn't held on very well. So I took it off recently, and I was feeling it. That edge is going to be a laser when I do put it on. It is. It's a very thin, very sharp edge. But laser. I'll probably have to sharpen it more often. And yes, it'll lower the life of it. But that's my axe. I can do whatever I want with it. Right. How about that?
You have 30 axes, so the life of 30 axes divided about, you know, it's...
Yeah, exactly. That axe will probably last way longer than and most right. people's, like, three axes, because I'll use it,
right.
you know, once every
most
2 years.
Most people's one axe.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one. Chris B. says, "Dear Dustin, in quotes, vintage? Stop. It's called old." That was on the Bushcraft X video. Now that nice. You know, it's I don't know. You know what he say about that?
Yeah, right. Vintage.
Okay.
Stop.
I feel like right. half the people who comment, who have negative things to say on most channels, are like debates over
the words. Terminology. Yeah, right.
The terminology, the wordage,
semantics. Yeah. Right. We actually call okay. it like occasionally for a while our daughter was very semantic based. Like she would be like she'd kind of say stuff back to us about the way we worded something, and my wife just kept calling her Semantica. She's like, "All right, Semantica, you know what I mean." But yeah, no, I think that comment is someone who's not interested in axes, because if you were so if I were to let's say see an old like BMW from like 1987, right? To me, that's just an old 80s BMW. It's no big deal. But for someone who's into BMWs, that's yeah. a vintage BMW from the late 80s.
Yeah, right.
You know, now obviously if right. I see a BMW that's in good condition from the 50s, right, that's different. That's like, okay, that's definitely a vintage car. I can see that. But
right, it's in the eye of the beholder. Just like you can
yeah,
go
exactly.
to the thrift,
yeah.
you can go to the thrift shop and get old suits, or you can go to some type of vintage shop,
and get the same suit. Yeah, right.
For more expensive, it's the same thing. Yeah. Like you said, I have a good friend who loves 80s BMWs. Loves
yeah, exactly.
Them.
Yeah,
he's had multiple.
My father-in-law loves them. Yeah,
right. And but to some people, it just yeah, it looks like an old.
It's just an old car.
Slow Beamer, but
right. Yeah, exactly. I'd like to talk to this guy. Be like, "Oh, what do you like to do? Like, what are your hobbies?" And he's like, "Oh, you know, I collect whatever. I collect old, you know, vintage records from Bob Hope." You know, I'm like, "Okay, you know, but they're just old records." Like, "Oh, no, but they have meaning to me, so that makes them vintage." You know, I think that's kind of what vintage is. It's like something that's old and has a quality because it's old that you enjoy. Right. And so an old axe is and something that's vintage is because it's old and it has a quality because it's old. It has something that's no longer the same in most cases. So for me, I love axes. So an old axe, so I was saying earlier, I made two axes this week. One was the axe for Aunt Stewart, who runs Young's Boatyard, and the other one I made was for my dad. And I never finished that story, but he got me two axes. And then at the end of that, he's like, And if you don't mind, I'd like for you to make me an axe, like just an old beater axe, just something I can throw into the camper because my parents got a camper. And to me, of course, I'm not going to give him like an old beater that I don't do anything to. So I took an older axe that I wasn't a big fan of. It's like a, probably it's a Michigan, a Stanley, Michigan pattern, probably from the 80s or 90s. To me, that's, I wouldn't call that like a vintage axe. Right. Because it's like, eh, it's just, it's past the kind of vintage time frame when axes were made a certain way. Like once you get into the time frame of the 80s and 90s, now they're made a different way. And they're in that time frame when they weren't made super high quality. And that's why, to me, that one was the beater, even though I cleaned it up and I polished the end and chamfered it and put a super nice edge on it and cleaned it, you know, cleaned it all up and put it on a brand new handle and, you know, and hung it beautifully. But yeah, but to me, that's not a vintage axe head. Because it's from a time period that's after that kind of vintage time period, what the things that I think. But for somebody who collects Stanleys, you know, that's a piece of the puzzle, you know, and something that's 20 or 30 years old. Just depend. It's all in the eye of the beholder.
So, I was just watching. Now I'm going to do an early recommendation.
Okay. Do you have any more Dear Dustins?
Yeah, I do.
I'm going to go through. That's fine. Gotcha.
On the topic here is Doug DeMuro. He reviews cars and trucks and everything. Simple. He got huge. So again, they don't need our recommendation, but he's a huge YouTuber, and he goes through everything really well, comprehensive. He does everything, goes through, shows all the neat little things. He has like a Doug score at the end. He takes everything.
Doug score.
Like what it looks like. Is it cool? Does it feel good? Blah, blah, blah. But he did a whole episode on the Pontiac Aztec, which was like that weird shaped SUV. Remember that? Had like, it's like, in, remember, you ever watch Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
He had the Aztec.
Oh, I don't remember.
It was like a weird triangle window.
Hold on, I'll take a look. I'm looking at it now.
It was Aztec with a K.
Oh, yeah.
But he went through. It's
like a SUV.
Yeah, really weird looking. And kind of ugly. Like, it was kind of a joke, but his video was of how it's kind of cool. Like, they added all these little things. Like, the center console is also a cooler that you can pop out and take with you.
Oh, nice.
The back has, like, this weird split opening thing, but the back tailgate falls down. It goes down like a truck tailgate.
Oh, yeah.
But it has two seats, like two seat patterns on it, so you can sit. It also, you could also get a tent kit that would come with it that would go from the back. So it had all these really
interesting like things. Add-ons and stuff.
Yeah, like they had thought about it, so that's my early
what's it called? Doug what?
Doug DeMuro.
Doug DeMuro. DEMURRO.
I'll look it up after.
Sure I can find him. I'll put it in somewhere. Yeah, no, that's cool. I like, and that's, yeah, I mean, that you're making that point that it doesn't matter. It's all in the eye of the beholder.
Right.
You know, someone's going to love something because that's what they love. You know, someone's going to love old glass jars. Someone's going to love old, you know, toy cars.
Someone's going to be excited by the Aztec in like 20 years.
Exactly.
Like, oh, you got an Aztec? You got a 2002 Aztec? Like, it had all these cool things. Like, yeah. And it wasn't great. It wasn't a great vehicle. It was on other chassis. You know, nothing was new, but they made it. Yeah. They made it different. And in the world of today, with cars that aren't different, you got to give props to them, even if it didn't work and it didn't sell. Yeah. Like they tried something different, and that it's worth a shot.
Yeah, I was driving behind a, I guess like an early 90s Mustang 5.0. Yesterday or the day before, and I was like, oh, such an ugly car. Just like boxy. You know, and like I like them because I know what's in them. You know, I know that they have a 5.0 engine in them in a little car like that, so it's like a rocket.
Yeah,
and
like late 80s. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, the late 80s, early 90s Mustangs that are just boxy, those 5.0s. And they're fast cars, and I like it because of that. But really, it's just a really boxy, ugly little car. I was like, oh man, that's no good. Like, man, but that was a rough time for Mustangs. I know. Yeah, they do.
Well,
and you know,
it wasn't as rough as like the 90s. Like, oh, all American cars were bad in the 90s. There was just nothing good. Okay. One last one, from, Zombie Worm. Dear Dustin, now I'm debating if I want to cut open the bones I found on a hunting trip. The skeleton I found looked oddly human, and there was no hands or feet and only partial skull. That was on making a bone handled knife.
That's funny. I saw that. I was like, ooh. You're going to take a risk on that one. It got a cursed knife. Cause like an old Indian burial ground, like leg right. bone.
This knife is cursed.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's what I did. You know, we found the bones from the deer skull that we found, and then we made the mount for it, and it's hanging up in the shop. And those are the leg bones that my daughter and I found. And, you know, I was barely able to get enough material out of that handle. Speaking of that knife,
that was rough.
We just, my daughter was like, spent the night at her friend's house, a day last week, cause they had a day off school. So she spent the night before, and it was like a Thursday, and found the knife, that bone handle knife that she had left it out on, like, in their playhouse. It's been sitting out. It had been sitting out for like 2 weeks or something. So it was okay. But you know, some rust and stuff on the blade, and the bone, because like it had been in the sheath, got wet and dried a couple times. It kind of discolored the bone some where the sheath was touching it. So, well, what are you going to do? Now it's just part of the story.
But now it's like, character.
Yeah, exactly. It is what it is. You know, like, oh, this changed color because I left it outside one time. Yeah, whatever. It's her knife. You know, as long as she uses it.
Don't leave it,
she
outside.
Yeah, she doesn't hurt anybody else with it. And,
right.
You know, hopefully it'll last her a long time. We'll see. You know, I didn't have... I know my daughter, and I didn't have expectations that she would cherish it and never, like, you know, the chances of her losing it are good, and that's okay. You know, it's like, yeah. It is what it is. You know, it's like, it just is what it is. I'm not naive about that. Mm. But yeah, I would say, make a handle out of that bone. Do it. It'd be sweet.
And if ghosts come to you, don't blame us.
Yeah, exactly. send them somebody else's way.
That's our Dear Dustin for this week.
All right. I wanted to let you know, last week we talked about collaborations, and I mentioned that Ben Butler reached out to us about making the sign for the Smithy, the Sadie Smithy. Mm-hmm. And and I reached out to Mike Hawkins to let him know that we were going to be doing it, and I wanted him in on the process because it was his idea, and Mike's one of our patrons and has been a longtime follower. And it was his suggestion. He was like, how about the Sadie Smithy? Because the Smithy build video was the last one that Sadie was in, our dog.
Right.
And he was super pumped to be a part of it. And so Ben's going to come up with an idea. You know, we're kind of all coming up with ideas, you know, kind of the initial brainstorming of what we might think it looks like. And then we'll kind of all come together and put them together and do something that'll look cool. So, and even if it ends up going one way, if Ben's is really cool, or if Mike's is cool, or if mine's cool and I want it to be mine, like, even still, I still wanted us all to be part of that process. And I'd be like, and if I had to like lean one way or the other, because I was kind of on the fence between a few designs, like, I'd want to lean toward Mike's because it was his idea, you know. It's like, and Ben doesn't care. He's happy to do whatever we want to do because he just wanted to contribute because he heard us talking about it in the podcast. And for me, it's more important that sign is a sign that represents Sadie, but also represents this community that we're a part of. And people reached out and wanted to help us make it. So, you know.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it might just have to be multiple parts and we put it together and.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Hang it cool. up.
Yeah, whatever it is. I mean, if, you know, if Ben does it completely and sends it our way, then we'll shoot a video hanging it up. I mean, it'll be hanging the new sign in the Sadie Smithy. But yeah, that's cool. I'm excited to have everybody be part of it, and everyone's excited to be a part of it. So,
cool.
Ready? All right. Recommendations. I'll do mine since you did an initial one. My recommendation this week is the Maker Camp. So I know we've talked about the Maker Camp quite a bit, but they just put a post up. And so this is kind of a dual recommendation. My recommendation is Justin Dietrich, who we actually had on the podcast a couple months ago. He is going up to the Maker Camp up to Blackthorn Resort in, give me one second. He's going up
July 16th, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, here's the post. He's going to be there July 16th through 18th to prep timbers for the structure that they're building at Maker Camp, which will be in October. So Maker Camp posted a post saying that like he'll be there and he needs help. The cool thing about the Maker Camp and Blackthorn is that they do put on a bunch of different events that are free. Like they do the hammer-ins, they do all this stuff. They want to build that community. So this is free. If you're anywhere in the Northeast area, this is up in New York. Follow the Maker Camp at the Maker Camp on Instagram and check out Justin Dietrich. Cause he's at J Dietrich, Dietrich 76 on Instagram. Check him out. He does some really awesome stuff. He just finished his paddleboard that we were talking about recently. He's putting some pictures up of him paddling around on it. I was like, heck yeah, brother. It's awesome. So they'll be doing that. And I'm thinking if I might try to make it up there for that. We'll see.
I might go up for a day or something. I also saw that too, and I'm really tempted.
Yeah, it'd be cool. Even if we drive up and stay a night, drive up Saturday morning and stay and come back on Sunday or something or whatever.
Yeah, we've been talking about that timber framing.
Yeah,
and it's all experiences and everything, and right. We'll just come and be willing to learn and help and.
Yeah, how awesome is that? Yeah, it's perfect. Exactly what I want to do. Right. I know I'll also enjoy the Maker Camp as well in October, but this seems like something that could be really enjoyable, right? Because there's no pressure. Everyone's there just hanging out and helping and trying to do this thing. And you feel like you can be a part of something that you're not just there to watch and you're not just a spectator. You're there to like help and be part of it. And everyone, I think as a man, we want to be beneficial. We want to like do something. We want to be there and we want people to know that we can help and that we can do what we need to do. And you got the tool ready for the person when they need it, or you're ready to lift it and put it into place. You want to feel like you're doing something. That's why dudes always like hang around the grill. Cause they like want to do something at a party, hey, flip that over for you. These look like they're getting hot. Can I do something? What can I help with? What can I work on?
I will say Orioles are out of town.
Nice. Yeah, Sean from Crafting Life I1, he also posted on it. He was like, ooh, he's like, we might have to make this happen. So I think he wants to come up with us too, because that'd be a cool trip up with a couple people and get together with some good guys up there. And that's the summer for me, so I'm out of school. As long as it doesn't overlap with some other vacation or something, I don't know yet. I just saw that post and was like, oh, I really want to be there to do this. I'm going to try to make it happen, so.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I'll have to look at my schedule and see if we can do it. I think it's right around Father's Day or something.
Make a good video too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Make it worth our trip.
Yeah.
What's your other recommendation?
That was my main one. I'll just go with that one.
Cool.
That's a good one. I'll keep the rest of mine for others when I can't think of something else.
Doug DeMuro, Aztec. Nice. Cool. All right. Well, that's it, guys. We went a whole hour and a half, and we were not really expecting to, but that's usually what happens when we start chatting. That's what the podcast is all about. If you guys like what you hear and you like what we do, you can always support us over on Patreon. And you can also just support us by, sharing the podcast, telling some other people about it, giving us a rating. If you go into Apple Podcasts, you can give a rating and leave a comment. All that stuff just helps to push the content and get it out to more people, which is what we want. You can also go over to YouTube and find us there, The Art of Craftsmanship on YouTube. Check out our videos and let us know what you think there. And you can follow us on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship and at The Art of Camera Guy. Check us out. Share what we do to other people. Suggest other people to us. Leave us comments. If you want us to talk about something on the podcast, or if you want to be on the podcast, let us know. I had a couple people reach out recently. Brian Cohn from B. Cohn Knives. Talked to him about joining us. The Hand Engraver, that's Evan Watson. He's going to be joining us on the podcast. So we got some people coming up that I'm excited about. And if you have something that you guys like or you want us to talk about, or you uh, or you think you can contribute to the podcast, let us know. You can either email us or send us a DM.
Or if you have a Dear Dustin.
Yeah, exactly. If you have a Dear Dustin, put it on, send us a DM, or you can send a DM to Devin at the Art of Camera Guy on Instagram, and then he'll Dear Dustin me for you. That was weird. I was trying to figure out how I would say that. Dear Dustin me for
Dear
you.
Dear Dustin. Dustiny.
It's your destiny. All right, everybody. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.